My name is Kelly Jean-Philippe, and you are listening to the Welcome to Fatherhood podcast. Today, I talk with Sandra True, CEO and founder of Get Real Parental Coaching. Sandra is an advocate for fathers, and in her coaching, aims to help dads feel empowered, confident, and discover the importance of their role. In today's episode, we discuss the value of factoring in a father's presence, voice, and experience in spaces where the parent imbalance may be overt or subtle.
And I love that because, again, when the dad sees that somebody is interested in them, they will give. They will give. And it's happening more and more. Is it that we have to wait for us to experience certain things before we then tune into dads? Do you know what I mean? That's a question that we need to know. You've had your experience as to why you now tune more into dads. I've had my experience of where I now tune more into dads. So I'm wondering now, is it where people need to be in certain spaces to experience the dad situations, feelings, to then put them on that pedestal where they belong as well?
Thank you for tuning in to this conversation and for spending part of your day with us. And now, here's the episode. Let us start by asking you to please introduce yourself.
So my name's Sandra True. I am CEO and founder of Get Real Parental Coaching. I run a childcare business for working parents, of which I use my 30 years experience and expertise to help parents build stronger connections with their children. As a mother myself, I understand the challenges that children go through when they hit certain milestones. So I decided to follow my passion and help as many parents as I can. I do this by giving them hints and tips and different strategies of way they can do things, sometimes in a one-to-one bespoke session, because as no two families are the same. So that's me. I'm also a podcaster myself, and I started out as a podcaster just interviewing parents, and they will share their story, and obviously the listeners can pick up some hints and tips of what they're going through, whether it relates or not. I had a few expert people come on in different fields, and that was good, but I found myself now podcasting dads only, just because I feel like I'm an advocate for dads. So that's where my podcast is taking me now. I do mentorship, and I've got my fingers in all sorts of pies. Doing all sorts of things.
So talk to me about that transition from primarily focusing on parents. But then when we spoke prior to this conversation, you said in the coaching setting with parents, you started to realize that there are certain aspects about men and fathers that just kept coming up. So what were some of those things that helped you make that transition into focusing on fathers?
So it was almost sort of like the other way around, really. So what happened was, when I was interviewing dads on my podcast, I started to hear a few conversations. So, for example, one dad was suffering from PTSD. Now, for me, I didn't know that was possible. And, you know, hands up, not everybody knows everything.
Right.
And I was very intrigued. So the more dads I interviewed, the more they shared their story about them suffering from mental health because of going through their fatherhood struggles, mm-hmm. and all the stories surrounding that. So that's why now my podcast is for dads, because that's helping me as a person, as a coach, to develop myself further. So when I'm coaching primarily mums, I can come from a point of view where I can say, well, what about dads? What's dad thinking? What have you asked dad? How is he feeling? How are you bringing him into the equation? And I'm asking all these questions because I'm getting the same response, I suppose, I had initially, like, well, I don't know. well, I didn't ask him anything. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like a sense of expectation. Well, I expect him to be okay. Mm-hmm. I expect him to know it all. I expect him to pull his weight and do this and that around the house. But nobody's actually shown him. They've just expected it. Now, certain people will say for the mother, that would come naturally for them.
Yeah.
And even if it doesn't come naturally for the dads, there's still no harm in showing him how to do something or what to do so that the expectations are there for him. And what I'm finding is because there's no expectations and no conversations about how we're going to parent together, mm-hmm. What's your part? What's my part? Because at the end of the day, people talk about co-parenting normally when the child is outside the home.
Yes.
And, you know, in terms of a breakdown of relationship, but there's still a relationship going on for the sake of the child. Mm-hmm. For the best interests of the child. But what I say is you should be co-parenting in the house, in the home, together. So one of the other interesting things was, and I suppose this was not everybody does this, but when I interviewed a dad, he said when his child was born, they didn't have turns of one sleeping, one waking up. If that child woke up, they both woke up, mm-hmm. you know, because mm-hmm. they wanted to do it together. Mm-hmm. They wanted to just pass the baby to the other one and walk that room. Okay, I'll take my turn and walk that room.
Yeah.
And they both slept when the baby slept and they both woke up when the baby woke up. And I found that quite unusual still, but I thought that was really sweet. And what that also does is they don't miss anything.
Yeah.
So children, babies, they grow so quickly, it's so easy to miss things. Oh, you're doing that now. I didn't know you could do. Oh, you're doing this now. I didn't know. So you're seeing it together. So I thought that was quite sweet as well. Obviously, it's each household is to their own. You do you, what best suits your household, as long as it's working together.
Sure.
So that's sort of really how that all came about.
Yeah, I'm in the midst of that now, given that my son is turning 7 weeks exactly tomorrow, as you know,
wow.
as the time that we're having this conversation. And there is some sense of that between my wife and I, where we also kind of do things together. If baby's awake, then both of us are awake. She usually puts him, or he usually sleeps throughout the day. And my toddler usually also goes down for a nap throughout the day, and I can't sleep. But at nighttime, when she's awake, I'm kind of aware of her being awake. And so I also want to be awake just to make sure that if baby is too much to handle, then I can just say, hey, just give me the baby, go back to sleep. So that's kind of how that works in my household presently right now as we're having this conversation. But I want to go back to the aspect of throughout your parenting coaching, bringing in the voice of the father, because there, prior to you happening upon that realization that dads were not yes. necessarily being considered, they were not being thought about, there was sort of this expectation that he'll just figure it out. That's sort of something that still persists in a lot of places, in a lot of pockets of parenting and how parenting is viewed and how parenting is displayed today. So what do you think, from your expertise and being in this space for such a long time and coaching parents, what do you think are some of the barriers to make that just like the matter of fact to also include fathers and not have it be such a effort to remember that he needs to be included also? What are some of the barriers that you've come across?
I think a lot of it is a socialization barrier, because if it's out there so much, and you know, we have to agree that it's a very much a mum's world.
Yes.
You know, very, very much a mum's world. I will put my hand up to that. I see it all the time. And I think one of the things that we discussed, that's something that 100% needs to change. And that is a barrier, because we mentioned it before, that when a child is born, the mum gets the little antenatal pack. Mm-hmm. Oh, here you go. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. What does the dad get? So it's almost setting him up to say she's in charge.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because she's getting this and she's getting on all the benefits, as in the social benefits of the child benefits and things, would really automatically go to the mother.
Yeah.
And that is a biggest barrier right there. It's from right at the beginning that we have to get past that. Dad needs a pack too.
Yeah.
Maybe in dad's pack.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You could have a dad pack to say, Dad, this is what to expect, Dad. You are now entering into this new fatherhood world. And this is kind of what it looks like. This is a guide of what it looks like. And this is how you could support mum in her journey of the pregnancy. This is how you could support and do your part and as a dad when the baby's born. So all those sort of things that a new dad, never been a dad before, could learn, because there's too many things fired at the mum. She's getting everything. She's getting all the resources and all the help. And, you know, just because the baby is physically growing inside of her.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the only difference. But there's got to be more things for dads from the very beginning. That's the biggest, for me, I would say, barrier. And also, there's just a lot of stigma around dads not being there as well. There's a lot of stigma around fatherless homes. And because either people's experienced that, or culturally, or they're seeing a lot of single, you know, if they're looking at statistics, maybe in a certain demographical area, the statistics are quite high for single parents. And I don't know if that's a barrier why they tune in only on the mum. And it's also, there needs to be more either television programs, podcasts, resources, something more from the government coming down on dads that this is your role. This is what we expect from you as well. So it just needs to come in from all angles, I think.
Sure.
Rather than, you know, there's a lot of talk that goes on in the barbershops. And I'm noticing even in the barbershops, they are talking. They're not just, you know, once upon a time, you go in a barbershop, I'm hearing, and they're just cutting your hair, yeah? And they're just probably saying what they're doing in the house. You know, they're doing an extension on the house. They're fixing this, and they're all these sort of manly type conversations they're having. But now, from what I'm understanding, there's a lot more talk about emotions now.
Absolutely.
This is how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
This is what's going on. I can't believe what's going on. And that's quite nice. So it's those kind of things that we want to be happening more. More talking, more conversations, and especially for dads.
You alluded to a conversation that we had prior to this conversation that we're having now, where we were talking about, the fact that imagining two people who had never been parents before and decide to try to become parents, and now they're both becoming parents at the same time. And just the difference in trajectories for the woman who's carrying and the man who is the father of this child, responsible for getting this woman pregnant. And his trajectory from hers is like totally different, because she has now become the focal point of all of the attention, not just in the medical spaces, but also in the social spaces. I mean, she is being upgraded, rightfully so, to now motherhood. And the father is just sort of like on the side. I mean, that was definitely the flavor around my experience when I first became a father back in 2020. And I've said this before, people would call my phone and ask for my wife to ask how she was doing. And I was glad that people were checking in on my wife. But there was no one really checking in on me and asking how I was doing. And even 3 years later, and now we have a newborn, there's a sense of whenever I start telling people after they ask, hey, how are you doing with this newborn and a toddler? And I start opening up, the environment in which I am opening up, right? Because on the one hand, we have the expectation from society that says men need to open up and share more and do all of that stuff. And so I'm receiving that messaging as a father who is in the throes of it right now. And yeah, I'm opening up. But then the environment in which I'm opening up is also not receptive, or it's not prepared enough to help me and to hold space for me to talk about what I'm talking about and what I'm expressing in a way that feels supportive. It's kind of like once I open up and I say, hey, I'm struggling, you know, it's been really difficult, I'm sleep deprived. It's almost like yeah, dude, you know what? We've all been through it. Suck it up. You'll be okay. So then how can men continue to do the thing that we're expected to do, open up and talk and share, if the environment is not receptive to the sharing and the opening up and the talking? Have you come across this dynamic in your coaching?
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, Kelly, a very interesting point. And what I'm finding is dads now are reaching out to things like dads clubs.
Yeah.
And any kind of social network for dads, and any groups in the neighborhood or just for dads, and podcasts for dads. That's what I'm finding where they're reaching, because families, close friends, they're just going to tell you that exact same thing.
Yeah.
Oh, you'll be fine. Yeah, we went through that, and you'll go through that phase and it's all good.
They almost see it as a rite of passage. And, you know, it's kind of like, well, what are you complaining about, really?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And you just get a full stop, don't you?
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
a full stop there. It's yeah. like, okay, you're good, full stop. Whereas what I'm seeing now, dad groups are growing. They're growing big and fast, whether it's a what's up dad's group going on, mm-hmm. whether it's a LinkedIn, you know, social media groups going on. That's what I see growing more and more each time. And that's where I'm hearing where dads are connecting with other dads. And sometimes what I'm finding also is that dads prefer probably not even to talk to their friends as such. I don't know if there's a sense of embarrassment or just not a good connection that they feel comfortable enough to talk about something so sensitive to their friends. So they would rather reach out to a group who they don't know. Oh, can I join this group sort of thing, you know? So that's what I'm finding now. And that's a good space. At least it's a space.
Yes.
That's all we need, is to give dads a space where they can go and feel freely, to speak freely and to relate to others. Maybe somebody else is still. And you know what? The important thing is that sometimes you don't necessarily want help. You just want to vent.
Yes.
You just want to be able to say how you're feeling and, oh, I feel so much better now. Now I can go home, or now I can just switch off and I'm good to go again. So it's not always about wanting help or Absolutely. Wanting someone to tell you something, because you know it. You Yes. do know it some of the time. It's just about venting and that safe space of where you can go. You're not being judged. You're not being criticized. You're just being heard.
Yes. And I can say specifically for my experience that I just referenced, you hit the nail on the head. It was not about needing a solution from somebody else Yeah. as much as it was, I am opening up. I need you to give me the sense that you actually care about what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's the aspect that feels to be missing from a lot of the spaces where men are opening up, excluding. And well, I can't even say exclusively excluding, because I'm part of a couple of dad groups on Facebook. And sometimes Okay. the flavor of the response to a dad who is saying, hey, I'm struggling with this, or I have a question about that, it's kind of like you have the handful who, you know, hey, man, we're here for you. You can private message me, which I love to see. I've done that for other guys too. And there's the sense that repeats the same things that we're trying to move away from as a society. That's Yeah. like, hey, man, suck it up. We've all been there. It's no big deal. Just keep pushing. And I don't think that's helpful. But in Yeah. reflecting on it, I can't necessarily be upset about seeing that even in those spaces, because outside of those spaces, that's the messaging that these men receive. And so Yes. that's what they're passing on to their comrades who are saying, hey, I'm struggling. So if I'm receiving that constantly, then that becomes the norm for me. And so I'm going to pass that on to the other guy. And I'm just like, hey, man, suck it up, because I've been told to suck it up my whole life. And that just perpetuates the cycle that we're trying to break away from.
And I know what you mean, you know, because I've been in some dad groups myself, and I'm listening and sort of reading the messages of what somebody's saying to the response. And I'm like, is that really helpful now? Oh, and I just sort of grit my teeth like, oh my goodness, did they just really tell them that? They don't really want to hear. I can tell they don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
But I like the way you said that you know, sometimes it's all about connection as well. Who you connect with really well, who you don't mind, like, oh, I don't mind reaching out to this one privately.
Yeah.
Because then I can sense that we understand one another. So we can have a little banter going on privately, because not everybody is trained. Not everybody is going through the same things. You know, some people use social media just to vent negatively.
Yeah.
Because that's how they're feeling at that time.
Yeah.
Or all times.
Yes.
As I've heard. on some occasions. So it is really important about who you connect with and what groups you join. Is it a positive group? Is there anyone in there who's got clubs set up all around, so they're aware and they're experienced with all the things that they do, so they understand when it comes in, they know how to give it back out.
Yeah.
So you still need to be mindful about where you're joining, who you're joining, and just make sure that it is a positive group. That's so important.
Absolutely.
Because if you're not feeling in a good space, the last thing you want is for someone to drag you down.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Or you feel worse than what you did when you came on, when you vented in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I think it's important for dads to join a variety of different dad groups and just kind of fill it out for a significant amount of time. And as you work through the group and you engage with other dads and you kind of get a flavor of some of the themes that emerge in that group, if it's vibing, then, you know, you stick to it and you contribute and all of that stuff. But if it's not and you're finding more negative than positive, then absolutely, it's just as simple as I want to leave this group. And,
yes,
you know, that's that. I'm curious if you've come across any fathers who have particularly struggled through having their feelings acknowledged, having their presence acknowledged, after experiencing a loss of pregnancy.
Interesting. If I think about it, I haven't personally, but I do know of other people who struggle. There's one particular dad. I think he struggled quite badly, because I think both of them really wanted children.
Mm-hmm.
And they went through, I think it was 4 miscarriages.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an awful lot. One miscarriage is a lot.
Absolutely.
For one, let alone 4. So the sense of losing, it's almost like grief again, and then grief again, and then grief again. I remember it was the mum who reached out to me telling me that the dad was struggling as much as she was struggling. So that's how I know. So that's why I said it wasn't a personal thing for me, but I had known about it.
Kudos to that person who reached out to you, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. So, you know, I said to her, try and get some counseling together. It's so important that we don't just leave him struggling.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you're struggling just as much. But if he try and go for counseling together, get some kind of therapy together, because it's so important that you're not holding that grief in. It needs to be out. So whether it is a grief counseling person that you need, mm-hmm. or whether it's therapy that you need, you need to source that for yourself. Only you would know that. But that's the advice that I would tell you now. And don't wait. Just try and source that now. Don't leave it any longer. Because although you're possibly trying again, you've got to prepare yourself that it may not happen.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Always prepare yourself. But in the meantime, get the grief counseling. So that's what I advised to the mum who reached out to me. But the dad was really struggling a lot more than she was.
Yeah. And, you know, I understand that I sprung this question up on you and it might be a little surprising, but in the interest of full transparency, I asked that question for a couple of reasons. One is that I've also, in my relationship with my wife, we've also experienced 4 miscarriages leading to our 2 children. And so I have personal experience and a personal interest in understanding how fathers get support, whether a lot of support or no support, which has been my experience in some of those spaces, as a result of what we were talking about earlier. So if we try to tie or link those 2 things together, you have 2 people who have become parents at the same time and who are now on different trajectories. The mother's getting in a lot of cases, and I don't want to speak in an absolute way because obviously there are exceptions to everything. But in a lot of cases, the mom is the one who is receiving almost 100% of all of the focused and detailed attention. And the dad is sort of reaping the benefits of that, but like third hand almost.
Yeah.
And so imagining that trajectory coming to a screeching halt in a moment where the pregnancy is no longer viable. And it's obvious, at least it was in my experience, it was obvious that, you know, my wife is the person who deserves all of the attention because she was the one carrying and it's her body and the procedures and all of that stuff. So she is the focus of attention for how do we move on from here. But if the trajectory for dad has been different from the gate, how much more is he put in the background, I think, and I sincerely believe because I experienced it, as a result of never being part of the equation to begin with, the moment that these 2 entered into the healthcare setting, for instance, and their trajectories just went in different directions in terms of the level of care, and not just care, because the woman deserves the care, the medical care, but in terms of the awareness of the emotional, the mental, the psychological, if you will, right, package of what it means to be in this phase of transition into parenthood. And now at this moment where the pregnancy is not viable or we're having, you know, difficulties that is compromising the fetus and all of those things, how much more is the dad now removed from consideration? And so what are your thoughts on that? I mean, I don't want to just project my experience onto every other experience, but it's hard for me to not trace that based off of my experience.
No, I totally understand what you're saying. And unfortunately, it's exactly what you're saying. They are way, way behind. They are at the back. You know what I mean? You know, and it's sad to say, and yes, it's getting better, but it's not good enough. It's not good enough.
I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, 100%. 100% it's not good enough. And we need to do more. Society needs to do more. The government needs to do more to just make dads feel like they are a part of what's about to happen. And this is the problem, that they're not making them feel like that from the beginning. It goes back to what we were talking about before. Make them feel like they're a part of it from the beginning. And make sure, you know, and it's not even just miscarrying. We've got to talk about grief in terms of if a child passes.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Because that's huge. That is absolutely huge. It's huge with a miscarriage as well, because the child was growing. It's alive. You know, it's a human being. As well as the child is out of the womb, bonded with the child, whatever age, the child is now no longer here.
Yes.
How are they as a couple? Where is the dad? What resources is in place for the dad to be dealing with all that mental stress, anxiety, loss, love, all of those things? There's not enough things in place for the dads, and we have to change that. Whether we change it by having more conversations of what we're having now,
yeah,
whether we change that by doing more community work, whether we change that by feeding through the channels that work their way up to government status to say, listen, we're not doing enough. At least you know we're doing something. If you know one person is doing something, we're doing something to make that happen.
So again, in the interest of full transparency, I can give a small testimonial of how what you just said is so spot on, because I work in a setting where, in a pediatric setting, where I have been the one to provide support to parents who have lost their child. And prior to becoming a parent myself, my focus, whenever I walked into a room as that support person, my focus was always mom. I can't tell you why, but I think it has everything to do with what you said earlier. It's just the socialization, which sets the expectation that mom is the one who needs attention. So far so that when I would get called into these settings, the people who would call me on behalf of this family would single out mom, even though dad was also in the room. So even though they said, hey, you know, mom and dad are there, but mom is really struggling. And so I had no categories. I had no personal experience to think about that and really see just how problematic that is. Until I became a parent myself, and until I started to come to or happen upon the issues that I was facing, as again, my wife was being celebrated for becoming a mom and I was being left in the dust. And again, it's not a thing of jealousy. It's not a thing of competition as much as it's the awareness of the issue. Two people who have become parents at the same time, and one of them is being elevated more than the other, and that just causes so many issues. Okay, so then once I became a father and I would get called into these situations, then I noticed that my focus started to change. Oh, wow, there is a dad in that room. And so now I could see myself in his place. Oh my God, how would I feel if people came in and they were just talking to my wife, who absolutely deserves the attention. But what the heck? I'm sitting right here too. And so that led me to change my own practice and how I approached families in these really devastating situations, where even if dad wasn't the emotive one, where even if dad was not the one who was doing a lot of the talking, whether dad was in a corner by himself, I made it a point to not just speak to mom, but also to go over to him and check in. Hey, man, I am so sorry. How are you doing? And even the line of questions, probing questions that I started to ask changed because of that socialization aspect that we're talking about.
Yes.
There's a different approach for how to get mom to talk, and it's not really that hard. But for dad, I needed to connect with them in a way to let them know that I don't need you to talk to me right now. I just want you to know, from a father to another father, like, I get what you're going through. And the moment that connection was made, most times the guy would just start talking. Hey, man, this is what I've been holding inside this whole time.
And I love that, because, again, when the dad sees that somebody is interested in them, they will give. And it's happening more and more. Is it that we have to wait for us to experience certain things before we then tune into dads? Do you know what I mean? That's a question that we need to know. You've had your experience as to why you now tune more into dads. I've had my experience of where I now tune more into dads. So is you know, I'm wondering now, is it where people need to be in certain spaces to experience the dad situations, feelings, to then put them on that pedestal where they belong as well?
It has a greater impact. I think it communicates so much more to the family, to the couple. It sets them up for, I don't want to say an easier road to picking up the pieces, especially after something this devastating. I mean, there's you can't contain grief. There is no roadmap for how one grieves, or so it's not a matter of that. But I think if there is something that can be communicated to parents in that space, devastating space, is that I want them to leave feeling like one was not suffering more than the other.
Yes, 100%.
Right?
100%. And I love that, because they are a couple and they're the ones that are now having to go home and continue their life as a couple. So if they've come away one feeling more elevated and empowered than the other, you're going to go back home with problems.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
From as soon as you walk through the door, because the other one's still feeling, still feeling crap.
Yeah. I certainly
Whereas
think
if you, you know, if you've given both of them and you've made that eye contact with the dad as well, you know, so they can see, they can feel that you listening to them and that you care about them, that's just as important as well. It's not just looking at the mum, but you're talking to both of them. You're looking at both of them. You're making that eye contact. I'm hearing both of you. You're asking the questions to both of them and they can connect with you. You've got to make them feel empowered. You've got to make them feel that that you care. Because you do care. That's why you're talking to them and you're being passionate about what it is that you want to empower them with, to make sure that when they leave you, they can feel, okay, we got this. We got this.
Yeah.
You know, we got this together.
So suppose that you are coaching a dad who is entering these spaces where he will not be considered in the same light as his partner. How would you coach that dad for him to sort of take control of the situation? And even if he has to, like, force himself in the foreground alongside his partner?
So I would say, I mean, I'm a big, big founder of connection. Anyway, so make sure that you put yourself in those spaces, because what I found was a lot of dads hang back.
Yes.
They want to do things, but they hang back. And some of that is because of the female saying, you can't do that good. You're not doing that properly. No, he doesn't like it like that. Stop doing, you know, they're getting too much. So they're like, okay, well, you know, you get on with it then, you do you, because I can't do anything right. So what I say is make sure you put yourself in a space and say, well, you know what? This is how I'm doing it because I'm dad. So this is my bit I'm doing here. When, you know, it's, you still want consistency, but there's going to be some flexibility somewhere. Yeah. You know, you're not going to change a nappy exactly the same way. You're just not,
right?
You know, that strap might go over really tight with the mom and it's not going to go so tight with the dad or what have you. But you got to make sure that you present yourself, you connect with that child as much as you can, and that you connect with the child, the wife, your partner, seeing that connection, you're making that effort, you're supporting her when she's tired, she's supporting you when you're tired, and you're putting yourself physically in those spaces to connect with that child. 100%, that is the way forward, you know, so that you know as much as your wife. You know, oh, did you notice that little teeth coming up at the back? Because you notice that.
Yeah.
She's not telling you, oh, did you notice? No, I noticed that. I'm telling you, did you notice that?
Yeah.
Oh, I think our child's ready for potty training now. He's asking for the toilet sort of thing. Let's go forth. So you're making the suggestions. You're putting yourself forward. You're putting yourself in those spaces. You're picking your child up from school as well. So all those little things that you would probably or society would expect mum to do, you're doing it.
So I'm going to reference back to a conversation that I had, I think, in season one of this podcast, where I was speaking with and a family. Oh, I don't want to butcher what she does, but she's she's an attorney, and she represents fathers in family court. Her name is Marilyn York. What you just said that really resurfaced that conversation in my mind is the fact that she learned through being in court and representing fathers in particular, how to ask a different set of questions to defend her clients and to show that even though they couldn't answer a particular line of questions, they did have insight that is as valuable as the other line of questions. So for instance, she said that she learned very quickly. I mean, she saw this, that the her counterpart attorney would be grilling her clients. Hey, who is your child's, what's the name of your child's English teacher? What grade did your child get in history? What medication is your child on? What is the name of your pediatrician, of your child's pediatrician? I mean, all of these like factual, you know, very concrete types of yes. questions that dads would just kind of, for the most part, in her experience, were like, I don't know those things. Mm-hmm. And so she developed a different type of question that was more suited to the experience of fatherhood and how a father relates to their children that mom could not answer. And so her questions would be something like, what is your child's greatest fear? What is your child's favorite superhero? Or, I mean, those type of like, hey, relational questions that yes. unless you spend time with the kid and you have that sort of connection and you have those conversations, those silly conversations, and the child is like, you know, telling you all sorts of, I mean, my 3-year-old tells me all sorts of shenanigans and I just go with it. I just go with
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
And so her line of questioning then spawn out of that, mm-hmm. just to highlight the fact that, yeah, mom has a particular set of skills, to quote the great movie Taken. Mom has a particular set of skills. So does dad. Mom mm-hmm. has a particular worldview. So does dad. Mom has a particular way of doing things. So does dad. They might overlap in certain aspects. In other aspects, they might be diametrically opposed. But both of them are absolutely necessary for the formation of this child. And so mm-hmm. to assume that just because the father, to your point, can't strap, you know, the nappy in the same way with the same type of tension as mom can, therefore that must mean he is not a professional nappy changer, is ludicrous. It's dumb. It's stupid, to be quite honest with you. And I really appreciated her bringing that into our conversation because it made me realize just the importance of the way that father, like the flavor of fatherhood in a parenting relationship is as crucial as the flavor of motherhood. Yet
100%.
In some way, shape or form, we continue to try to make one look almost identical to the other. And to me, that is like, I don't get that point.
I'm with you on that. Really. I don't understand. I really don't understand either. Because, you know, you've said it yourself that two people can do the same things, but in a different way, but they're still bringing quality. They're still being intentional.
Yes.
Yeah. So they're still connecting in their own way. And that's just as good as the other. So why we're stripping back one more than the other, I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But, you know, I love all that.
As our time is coming to an end, I want to explore this question from the angle of, here you are, you're a mom, you're a woman, and you are advocating for dads and fathers, and you're even coaching fathers. So let's play on the gender differences a little bit. What is the significance of someone of your position, someone of your stature, a woman who is advocating for dads? How does that influence how dads are receptive to the coaching that you provide to them?
So I try and be as neutral as possible, but I want dads to feel empowered. Mm-hmm. I want dads to feel important. I make sure that I let dads know that you need to be intentional because you are the most important part of that child's life as much as the mum.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when I stress that, it just uplifts them as a woman, as a point of view coming from a woman.
Yeah.
They feel that stronger, you know. Man can talk to each other, that banter. Women can talk that banter. But when a woman is trying to empower a man to say, listen, you are doing an incredible job. You are wonderful. You just need to tweak one or two things and you've got it. You know, you don't feel any less important than the wife. And I love doing what I'm doing. I'm passionate about what I'm doing. If I can make especially a dad feel 100 times better than he did before our phone call, then to me, I feel like my job here is done.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. If, you know, they're weary of what does this woman know? What is she going to be telling me? And I'm ready for that. And I appreciate that. You know, when they talk to me, tell me their story, I'm like, okay, what's happening here? What are you doing here? Right. I've sussed the whole scenario within a few minutes. That's just how my brain works.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So here's what you can do because you're doing it already. You just want that confirmation. You just need to be heard and you're doing a good job. Just tweak a few things and you're all good to go. So that's, you know, I feel good. I'm passionate about what I do. Absolutely passionate. And if I can help one person change their mindset about what they're doing or help them along their way, then I feel like I've done my part.
Yeah. And I think what you're highlighting is the importance of the woman's role in infusing life into the father's role. Moms have a really important role in how fathers not only get brought up to the same level, but also in the nucleus of the home, just how that man sees himself and his role as a father. Not that it is entirely her responsibility, but man, as a man, I know when my wife says, babe, I am so thankful for you doing X, Y, and Z, or I'm so thankful mm-hmm. because you take such great care of our toddler. I just feel, if I was feeling deflated, I just feel like I got like two humongous containers of helium just like infused in me. Like I'm floating Absolutely. On air right now.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate, you know, you bringing that into the equation, because it is absolutely crucial for mm-hmm. both parties to continuously elevate each other.
Yes.
Even in spaces where the one might feel like they're getting more of the benefit of the doubt, how much more powerful would it be if that one who is already on the pedestal brings attention to the fact that why isn't my partner also on an equal pedestal?
Yes, 100%. And we want more of that, you know, and you know, in your relationship that once a child comes on board, your relationship changes.
Yes.
Because it's not you two anymore. You've got a human being that you need to be 100% responsible for. So that takes a lot of work. That takes a lot of thinking. That takes a lot of mind space. That takes a lot of arguing. That takes a lot of making up. That takes a lot of working together as a couple. So during that time, you want to be able to complement each other. You want to be able to uplift each other and elevate each other as couples, because that's really important.
Sandra, thank you so much for the time that we've spent in conversation. These last couple of minutes, I'm going to leave it up to you to tell people how they can find you, and to wrap anything up that you feel we didn't wrap up during our conversation.
So you can contact me on www.getrealparentalcoaching.com. That is my website. And Get Real Parental Coaching is my podcast. If you'd like to be considered to come on my podcast, just reach out to me. I'm not scary, honestly. So, I'm on Instagram, Get Real Parental Coach, and I have a link tree on there that links all my social medias together anyway. But what I would like to say, especially to dads, continue doing what you're doing. You're probably doing a wonderful, wonderful job. But if you feel that you need extra help, extra guidance, extra assistance, I'm available. You got my details there, because I'd hate for any dad to be struggling on his own and feel like he's got nowhere to turn. And if he wants somebody that's not in the family as a friend, just, you can still reach out to the dad groups that we spoke about earlier.
Yeah.
There's so much, you know, mental health is through the roof at the moment, but we want to make sure that as a dad, that you are getting the help and support, or just to vent, that you need. So please, please do not keep it to yourself. That's what I 100% say.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I will have a link to all of your stuff in the show notes of the episode. Thank you for coming on this platform. Thank you for the work that you are doing. Thank you for being an advocate for fathers like myself and many others, for not shying away from the challenge of speaking to dads and wanting to see for dads sort of the same things that we see available for moms, and for making dad the driving point of everything that you do. I appreciate you very much, and all the success to you, continued success to you moving forward. Thank you.